Good morning and welcome to the Thursday, January 28th meeting of the Minnesota House of Representatives Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, those same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event that you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via that app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. If a member is on their phone and doesn't have access to the raise your hand feature, please email Ms. Burt and she will put your question in the queue. This is the digital equivalent of getting the attention of the chair or committee administrator. An email from your House account with the subject line, please recognize, is all that is required if you're on your phone. Ms. Sunderland, would you please call the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandstead.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Kreisha, present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damuth.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson is excused. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Zhang.
Present.
And Representative Joachim. Representative Joachim. And that is the roll. We do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderland. Representative Wolgamott, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Wednesday, January 28th meeting? And if so, or 27th, excuse me, and if so, would you like to move approval?
Sure, I have had the opportunity to review the minutes, and I would like to move their approval.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Wolgamott motion? Members, this is an oral vote. All those in favor of the Wolgamott motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Members, as you know, this week we're examining the disruptions COVID has caused in our schools and communities. Today we'll be hearing testimony on House File 4 from Representative Hassan. The committee won't be taking any formal action on this bill. This is an informational hearing for today. Representative Hassan, would you like to introduce your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My apologies. I ran from another committee. I had housing as well at the same time.
Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I've just realized this is the first time I'm presenting in this committee. If this wasn't a virtual hearing, I would have brought treats. So for the record, I owe this committee a treat as soon as we start doing an in-person hearing. So somebody remind me. The year 2020 has been a challenging year for all of us. We had to learn how to use Zoom. We had to learn how to stay away from each other, 6 feet apart every time we're gathering, how to stay indoors, how to rearrange our lives so we can stay healthy, of course, and alive. For many in the PIPA communities, the luxury of staying home wasn't an option because many of them are frontline workers. And for many of our students, distance learning was a huge burden as they have struggled with internet connections, laptops, and isolation, being isolated from their friends, teachers, and their school environment. Being a teenager and a young person and being in isolation are not a good combination. I'm a mental health clinician, and I tell you that if it was up to me, I would never want my teen to stay home. But We didn't ask for this virus. And we're doing the best we can to keep everyone healthy and safe. Today, I present to you House File 4, an act relating to education financing, implementing actions to combat the education effects of COVID-19, appropriating money, and amending Minnesota statute, the following Minnesota statutes. This bill includes a wide variety of provisions that address the impact of COVID-19 on students as well as the broader education system. Students have felt the impact of COVID-19 on both their academic progress as well as their social and emotional well-being. Similarly, schools have experienced financial impact on their budgets, both due to increased cost of providing safe education during the pandemic and due to a decrease of around 8,300 students enrolled, not enrolling in public schools this fall. This bill includes several provisions, wraparound services. We're spending $2 million in full community school services to hire coordinators on accelerated time of about 6 months instead of the normal timeline year. And then $6 million on funding for trauma-informed coaching. In my opinion, this is less money for a year that, you know, we know that we're living in the midst of trauma and our young people are experiencing trauma, whether it's COVID-19, whether it's the murder of George Floyd and the civil unrest that followed, as well as not knowing what their future is going to be like. They are in the midst of trauma. This is a continuous trauma. So when this is all over, not only the kids, but all of us are going to need to deal with that trauma. So I'm glad this provision includes in here, even though I would have loved it to have more money. We're also spending $5 million appropriations on math and reading, $3 million on math and $2 million reading. And as we know that, you know, we're not a country that's great at math and reading, math and science. So to spend money on math, even before the COVID, we were struggling with math. So this is a great provision. There's a $5 million for appropriation for after school through Ignite. And this is, as you guys know, Ignite has provide after school programs throughout the state. Apologize, I'm losing where I was. And this, they would stipulate the money to organizations that deliver all day programming, provide culturally specific academic supports, and have staff members who reflect on the racial and ethnic diversity of students and include significant proportions of students with disabilities or BIPOC communities, and also adhere to delivering through supports through social and emotional learning. There's extended time formula to reach kids statewide for summer programming. This formula is based the need cost for the need cost is in the fiscal note. We're also doing some adjustment in special ed to help deliver services to students who are on IEP, a requirement that districts take disability into consideration when, determining truant referrals. As we know that many of, Black students are high, disproportionately, referred to child protection services for truancy. So we're asking, schools, districts to take disability into consideration when they're determining truant referrals. 1 year extension of the special ed secondary transition for students that would age out 2021 school year. I'll tell you, I got a letter from a young man who is 22 years old who was supposed to graduate last year, but couldn't graduate because he didn't have a placement. And he's still in school. And he still doesn't have a placement. He's 22 years old. He's still in transition program. And what he wrote to me was so touching. He said that this is not only going to impact me, but I'll tell you, it's going to impact the kids who are graduating 2022 as well as 2023. He said, we don't want it to sit around and do nothing. We want to, you know, continue this programming until we have a place, another place that we can go. And as we know, this summer, all the, you know, workspaces that this young people would have find a job placement were closed. So he still doesn't have a placement, and he will continue. He's one of the lucky ones that have his transition school is okay with him staying for another year. But this is a real problem for transition schools. They don't have a placement for this young people who are graduating. And we're asking them to extend one more year for them so they can stay. There is a requirement for district to prioritize level 3 and level 4 IEP students when returning to on-site instructions. We got some concerns from some, you know, of the advocates that we should not only say level 3 and level 4. There are students who have IEP who need to be prioritized, and they're not in level 3 and level 4, and we're working with the advocates to make sure that that language reflects on that. And then we're clarity that districts may conduct home visits on IEP. And that's my train of thought here. This is what happens when you're looking at three different screens.
It's all right, Representative Hassan.
I mean, that's an overview of what we're doing in this bill. we're spending a lot of money, yes, but I know that many of us in this education advocates care about students. We care about what has happened with students. We care about the impact of education, the impact of education on our, you know, the cost of education. Of course, we care about that. But we also care about, you know, the success of our students and making sure that whatever education was disrupted and lost, that we make up. And this bill is the first bill. It doesn't cover everything, but this is the first bill to say, like, here is what we're doing. We're investing in our kids because we know that COVID has made a huge hole in our education system. And of course, you know, it's the hope that we're also going to get some help from the federal government, because the state alone can't fund everything that we need to fund. So with that, I stand for questions, and we have testifiers, of course.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Would you like to move to testifiers at this time?
Yes, please.
I believe there's a question from Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson, is this a question for the chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, we're not taking official action, correct?
That's correct, Representative.
So did you still want to move Representative Hassan's bill? She moved it, but she doesn't, you know, abide on this committee. So I was just wondering if you were moving it. And my other question was, are we going to get a report on the fiscal note?
Representative Erickson, as we're not taking action, I don't see a need to move it to be before the committee formally. This is an information hearing. When we do take action, we will obviously move through the proper process at that time for consideration of the bill and any amendments that may be offered. I know that we just very recently received a fiscal note, and I'm not sure the status of all of that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Superintendent Nanowski.
Yes, sir.
You're the first person on my list. Good to see you. Welcome to the committee. If you would please state your name for the record and proceed. If members have any questions for the superintendent, please hold them until after he has spoken. Superintendent.
Hi, my name is Steve Yanowski, superintendent of Richfield Public Schools, first green suburb of the Twin Cities, and Richfield, the urban hometown. So thank you, Representative Hassan, Chair Dabney, and members of the committee for having me today. Richfield Public Schools is a district of over 4,000 students, over 70% students of color, and as of last year, almost 60% of our students living in poverty. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 4. As I'm sure you all know, schools face many challenges educating students during the pandemic. At the same time, we're living in a politically charged world where we see people unable to agree on what is the truth. We see them disagreeing on what is reality. I'm here today to share a couple of things that transcend our differences. They transcend where we disagree, and I'm here to remind us of our shared truth and our shared reality. I thought about sharing with you the story of our 84-year-old bus driver, who still, without a vaccine, is transporting children, and who, when we moved to distance, delivered some of our literally hundreds of thousands of free meals served to feed our students and our community. I thought of telling you of our kindergarten teacher who is creating individual lessons online and having daily meetings with over 30 students in her distance kindergarten classroom. Then I remembered, it's about our children. It's about all of our children. It's about all of our students. I came to share with you what we all know. We know that times are hard. They're hard for our students, they're hard for our families, and many people are struggling more than they were before the pandemic. On this, I believe that we all agree. Even though we know people are struggling, I look at our projected state allocation for compensatory education dollars. I see that our percent of students living in poverty dropped by nearly 10%. I see that despite hundreds of hours of invested social worker, administrator, teacher, outreach worker, and nutrition worker time spent, not in serving their students and families, but trying to get free and reduced lunch forms completed, we supposedly have 10% fewer families living in poverty. The result, right now we are looking at over $900,000 fewer compensatory education dollars for next year. Compensatory dollars, those dollars specifically designed to serve students and families living in poverty, students and families who are struggling. What we know right now is that with more families struggling, we appear to have fewer dollars to serve those in most need. More than that, our struggle won't end with the pandemic, and the pandemic struggle will continue. I came today to remind us that through no fault of their own, our children will struggle, and their struggle will not end with the pandemic. This pandemic created challenges that will take years to overcome. It can be easy to say that the federal government gave schools funds to help with these challenges, and we as a district appreciate those funds and will use them for our students. The true answer, however, is not one-time money. It'll take long-term investment and support. It will take bills like House File 4 today, and we'll take other creative bills in the future as we continue to identify and rectify our children's struggles created by this pandemic. Please consider supporting House File 4 and continue also to think creatively how to support our shared reality and our shared truth, that our children need us now and will need us in the future to help them gain the lives they all deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Members, are there any questions? Seeing none. Next on my list, we've got two speakers focused both from joining us from Deer River. Again, I'll ask members to hold questions until after they've both spoken. First on my list is Deanna Ron, the Full Service Community School Coordinator from Deer River. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Deanna Roan. Good morning, Chair Dabney and committee members. My name is Deanna Roan, and I am the Full Service Community Schools Coordinator at King Elementary School in Deer River. This is the fourth year of the Full Service Community School strategy being implemented in Deer River schools. We were fortunate to be the recipient of a Department of Education grant in October, and we are working on scaling up our model in Deer River, and we've added a second coordinator at the high school. Last spring, when schools had to pivot to distance learning, we were able to leverage partnerships that we have built with our full-service community school to meet the needs of our students and families. Our partnership with Second Harvest Food Bank provided additional food for families experiencing food insecurity. We have hosted a pop-up food pantry in our school parking lot each month since March. We are also working with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe to staff learning hubs in two of our outlying communities. These hubs provide academic and technology support to students participating in online and hybrid classes. A partnership with our local clinic provides snacks during the learning time. One of the biggest challenges for our families is transportation. Many of our families don't have consistent, reliable transportation. Our district covers 500 square miles, so lack of transportation impacts everything. Impacts student attendance, parent engagement, access to medical, dental, and optometry care. Partnering with the district bus company, we are providing transportation for dental and optometry appointments. If transportation is a barrier, we will try to find resources to eliminate the barrier. During this past spring, we were able to set up 7 remote distribution sites for meal pickups for our families. Community members stepped up to deliver meals to families without transportation. The full-service community school model helped Deer River move forward. We were set up to help our families right away. Funding to support a coordinator is vital to this strategy. Thank you to Representative Hassan for authoring House File 4. Please consider supporting it. Thank you to Chair Davini and the committee for this opportunity to support this bill.
Thank you for that, Ms. Roan. Next, Jennifer Steffen, principal at King Elementary. Welcome to the committee, ma'am. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Jennifer Steffen. Good morning, Chair Davini and committee members. I am the elementary principal at King Elementary in Deer River. We currently serve approximately 300 kindergarten through fifth grade students in the hybrid learning model and approximately 80 students online. At the start of my principalship 6 years ago, we did not have a full service community schools coordinator in Deer River. I worked with our nurse to provide yearly dental and eye clinics for our students. We had parent volunteers and our school social worker operating our food pantry. The resources and support we were able to offer our families was minimal. Working the last 3.5 years with a grant-funded full-service community schools coordinator has grown our model immensely. We have been able to create a system of support for our students and their families. Our coordinator has worked tirelessly to find partners in our community for our full-service community schools work. We often hear that teachers are more than educators. They are nurses and social workers too. With our full-service community school staff, we are able to remove some of those responsibilities from teachers' plates so they can focus on instruction and relationships. When we meet the basic needs of our children and their families, learning returns as the main focus of school. When the pandemic hit, the Deer River School District was better able to serve our families with our full-service community schools model firmly in place. We were able to get food out into the community faster and also get all families access to the internet. These two tasks would not have been completed as seamlessly without our full-service community schools framework and coordinator. All students, families, and communities need and deserve these resources. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for including funding for the full-service community schools in your bill. And thank you, Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Steffen. Any questions for members? Seeing none, we are joined today by a student. We always like that. Actually, several of them I'm seeing. I'll introduce the three of them. I have Daniel Winker from William Byrne Elementary in Burnsville, and Talitha Winker, his parent. Welcome both of you to the committee. If you could please state your names for the record and proceed with your testimony. We're thrilled to have you here.
Thank you. Well, my name is Chairman and committee members. My name is Dana Winker and I'm 10 years old. I'm a fifth grade student at William Bernstein Elementary in Burnsville. I've been working with Alexi, my math core tutor, for the last 8 weeks. Alexi has helped me understand multiplication, facts, fractions, and so much more. Alexi explains it in a way that helps me understand. For example, he will put things in finite terms and explain the math problems. Because of his help, my math scores have improved by 20%. When I first started tutoring with Alexi, I took a math test and I got 15 out of 30. And I took the math test again and I got 30 out of 30. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Talitha Winker and I'm Daniel's mom. Since the start of the school year, Daniel's been attending virtual school. That means he's been at home. That also means that I've been his lunch lady, his coach, his art teacher, his best friend, and he's my coworker. After receiving Daniel's standardized testing scores from last year, I was concerned Daniel was going to fall further behind and get further disconnected. And because of the pandemic, he was going to miss that face-to-face assistance he was used to receiving in school. So after watching a news episode and hearing what other parents were doing to find extra support for their kids, I did a Google search to find free tutoring in my area, and I found Minnesota Math Corps. I was familiar with Minnesota Reading Corps because Daniel took part of Minnesota Reading Corps in the second and third grade, so I knew it would help. The same day I submitted a request for information, I received a call and scheduled an assessment. And within a few weeks, I was connected with Alexi, and it's been fantastic. Alexi's been more than a tutor for Daniel. Alexi's been a friend and a role model, and it's changed his outlook on math. Alexi's helped build Daniel's confidence in math, and there's been measurable progression in Daniel's testing scores. I am grateful for Minnesota Math Corps, and I hope you consider supporting this bill. Thank you for your time, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Daniel, outstanding. Let's get everybody give a big shout out for Alexi. That was great. Mom, thank you so much. So glad you found Math Corps and that it's working so well for Daniel. Members, any questions for either of those testifiers? So next on the agenda is Mr. Abdul. I'm going to get this wrong, sir. I apologize. Diari, from affiliated with the Multicultural Autism Action Network. Sir, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Abdul Duria. This is Abdul Kadir Duria, but I'm known by Abdul. Thank you, Representative Devaney. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for introducing this bill. Members of the House of Education Policy Committee. Thank you very much for giving me the chance to testify in front of you. And thank you also for the attention, for your attention to the education needs of students with disability, especially during this COVID-19, where school was disrupted and our students with disability missed that face-to-face education. And many students struggled or fall behind because of the lack of face-to-face instruction. I believe that this bill, it's going to help. It's going to address most of the needs of children with disability to help them cope and come to where they were before the pandemic. With the proper support. The distance learning, it damaged most who lost skills are students who come from parents, from households where English is not the first language. Parents who have educational and language barrier who cannot help their children because they were depending only on the instruction, the virtual instructor, the educators, they were trying their best, but because there is not enough help at home. The students did not progress. Just to give an example of myself, I'm a father to two children with autism, 16 years old boy and 14 years old girl. My son, which is 16, he's 10th grader now. Last year when he was at 9th grader, my son, he was gifted all his school life, especially in math. He was ahead of his grade. When he was in 9th grade, he was working at about almost 11th grade level math. Since the pandemic, when he stayed home, his school life was disrupted, the social isolation, his therapy was disrupted. He lost all his outdoor activities. Because of this, he went on anxiety. He got a seizure, especially frequent seizure. He ended up with self-injury behavior. He became very violent toward others. Because of all this, he lost his academic skills, and he fell down from 10th and 11th grade level to 4th grade level. He is, because the mental health issue, his physical health issue affected all of his education. So once he go back to school, I mean, it's going to take him probably a year or two to go back to where he was. I mean, it is a dream of all every parent with a child with disability to raise a child to get a meaningful education, to get to become a productive member of the society. So I believe that this bill is going to help us to raise our children so they can finish school, have a good job, and be productive members of the society, which is going to be a win-win situation for everybody. Thank you very much for allowing me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Doria. Members, questions? Seeing none, continuing through the agenda, next, Carrie Dennison Kanine, the Executive Director of Ignite After School.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to members of the committee. My name is Carrie Dennison Kanine, and I am Executive Director of Ignite After School. We're Minnesota's statewide after school network. We bring together a broad range of after school stakeholders, both nonprofit and public sector funders, and local and regional after school collaboratives across the state. Our primary goal at Ignite is to close race, income, and geography-based access gaps to high-quality after-school and summer programs, and we do this by building partnerships through professional development and issue education. I want to thank Representative Hassan for authoring this bill and for including after-school and summer learning in this comprehensive package that we believe has really been designed to address COVID-19 learning loss, and also to address the social and emotional wellness of young people. I just wanted to share that after school and summer learning, high quality after school and summer learning can be such an important strategy and approach to address learning loss, but and also to support the mental health of young people and the social and emotional well-being. There's decades of research to show this and some really cool research that shows that for low-income young people who participate regularly in elementary school, it can close the math achievement gap by grade 5. And during the COVID-19 outbreak, it's really deepened inequities and hardships for children and youth across Minnesota, with a disproportionate impact on young people of color and Indigenous communities. And we're especially supportive of the way that this bill prioritizes funding directly to organizations with programs that provide culturally specific support and who have staff who reflect the young people that they serve. We feel like these are really critical components. And since the beginning of the pandemic, Ignite After School has been regularly convening after school programs all over the state. And we've heard the stories of what they've been up to. They've been providing emergency childcare and youth development programming, social, emotional, and mental health supports, academic mentoring and distance learning supports. They've been helping out with device and connectivity, as well as supporting basic needs, including food services and delivery. And as much as after school can be about addressing gaps, after school has also been a way to really highlight the assets and the strengths and the talents of young people. We know that young people in Minneapolis have been creating PSAs to really share public health information with their peers. And after school and summer learning can really be a way to make sure that young people don't feel disconnected, but that they have a sense of belonging and a way to contribute to their communities and to show leadership. So Ignite After School wants to thank all of you for your support of this bill. And also, we would like to, you know, really, again, thank Representative Hassan for including after school and summer. And we're really ready to get to work to support young people around the state. Thank you so much.
Ms. Dennison-Kanin, thank you for joining the committee again. Next on the list is Rebecca Graves, Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of the Leech Lake area. Ms. Graves, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Ms. Graves, you're muted.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Rebecca Graves. I'm the Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of Leech Lake area. Organization typically serves more than 3,000 kids in four communities in and surrounding the Leech Lake Reservation. Most of the kids we serve are members of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and of school age, K through 12. Boys and Girls Club give kids a safe place with caring adults while they're not in school and their parents are not at home. Our program covers education, STEM enrichment, healthy lifestyles, career readiness, character and leadership, providing equitable opportunities to youth who need us the most. In addition to the Leech Lake Reservation, Boys and Girls Club serve five more Native communities in Minnesota, with additional clubs on Red Lake, White Earth, and Boys Fort, as well as Metro clubs at the Minneapolis American Indian Center and the Little Earth of United Tribes. Clubs provide care and programming to more than 13,000 school-age youth at these sites. Native clubs strengthen their youth's cultural identity through programming that explicitly promotes positive youth growth and development. While many Native clubs are operating functions of their tribal government, our club is an independent nonprofit with close ties to the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Leech Lake area clubs have been open since the beginning of the pandemic. Short on funds, PPE, and staff, we still provided emergency child care to frontline families in the Cass Lake Bena, Walker, Hackensack, Akeley, and Deer River School District every day. We slowly reopened outer line sites when we felt we could safely serve kids, and today serve an average of 56 youth per day in learning pods at three locations. We continue to serve youth, although not at the numbers we once did. We have had to restrict our numbers for health and safety. While we've seen our expenses increase and staff levels remain the same pre-pandemic, we worry about our youth who are not able to attend the club and look forward to the day that they can return in full. Well, it's been a tremendous challenge filled with risk to our staff, quarantine closures, food security, and constantly changing school plans. We know that the kids we serve need a safe place to be, and we'll continue to serve them at best we can. The Cass Lake Bena School District currently ends their in-person school day at 1:45 so that teachers can shift over to teaching the students who opt to continual virtual learning. They do not have the staff or the resources to do both simultaneously. Our Cass Lake Club opens earlier so that these students do not have to return to an empty house where their parents do not have the luxury of working from home. We are not reimbursed by the district for any extra time we are open. While we receive some emergency funding from the tribe and the CARES Act, we continue to see reduced revenue and increased costs. We know the importance of the work we do, and we'll strive to continue this work as long as we can. However, this path is unsustainable, and without more financial assistance, we fear an impending dire situation. Perhaps just when a larger number of youth will be able to come to us to begin the healing and learning assistance that this pandemic has necessitated on our communities. We believe a much larger investment in education and out-of-school time will be needed. We appreciate the committee's consideration of House File 4 and your commitment to the youth in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Graves. Next, members, we're joined by another student, Kayla Sims, an 11th grader at Edison High School in Minneapolis. Ms. Sims, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Kayla Sims. I am an 11th grader at Edison High School in Minneapolis. The pandemic has affected everyone, but today I am here to speak to the experience of me and my peers. Last school year, I was an almost straight-A student. I enjoyed school and learning was easy. I felt connected and mentally healthy. My friend group was similar. Although school ended in March, we were all still able to stay on track and connected. This school year has been difficult. I have been a virtual student for my entire 11th grade so far. School is challenging for me. I am barely able to keep up with my online assignments. This is the same for almost everyone in my friend group. Those who used to get A's and B's in person now get C's and D's in virtual learning. Others who struggled with in-person learning are now just not showing up to virtual classrooms at all. There are no clear boundaries for many for what is school and what is home. The lines, especially for high school students, are blurred. Many have to choose between family responsibilities and school. This has created a lot of stress for me and my peers. We are trying to keep our grades up, but also worrying about our family responsibilities. So many of us are not capable of keeping up with work. Beacons has provided a space at the downtown Y that is safe and helps me learn with no distraction. For many, home does not feel safe. Having a consistent space along with consistent adults help me has created a routine. My youth worker, Roz, helps me navigate online learning, helps me with homework and complete assignments, and helps me advocate for myself to teachers. She has gone above and beyond to make this very not normal learning environment fun and motivates me to get my work done. The Beacons team is the reason I and so many of my friends have passing grades this school year. In addition to virtual learning support, my Beacons Dance Enrichment Club has provided stress relief and time to connect with my peers, although distant. Young people's mental health has been negatively impacted by the pandemic and community events. Being with Beacon staff and my peers have provided something to look forward to and has given me a positive perspective in life, even during really hard times. Every young person deserves to have out-of-school time programs like Beacon. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Thank you for sharing your experience like that. Members, any questions on this panel of speakers? Seeing none, we'll continue through the agenda. Next on the agenda is Rebecca Wade, a special education teacher with the Roseville Area Schools. Ms. Wade, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Rebecca Wade, and I'm not able to start my video. It's been stopped by the host, so I'll just continue or wait for that to pop on. All right, thank
you. There you are.
Here I am. Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Rebecca Wade. I'm here today in support of House File 4. I'm a K-12 special education teacher currently working as a teacher on special assignment. I support special education teachers and students as well as provide professional development opportunities in the Roseville Area School District. My work over the last 8 years has provided multiple opportunities for me to participate in and facilitate hundreds of hours of professional development around trauma-informed schools and restorative practices. I have supported and coached others around the importance of creating and cultivating space for stories and narratives to be shared and relationships to be built and strengthened. Trauma-informed and restorative schools provide opportunities for connections and relationship building and ways to remain in community with each other, even when times get challenging. And when we know the stories and narratives about those we are in relationship with, when we see the humanity in others, something happens. The connections between school and home increases, absence and truancy decreases, engagement increases, and students learn and thrive. This connection allows students to show up as their authentic selves, with all their brilliance and gifts and strengths, and yes, some messiness. As a teacher, I often witnessed adults respond punitively. Responses that were done to students, removed them from class, dismissed or suspended from school, with no opportunity to re-enter in a relational way. I look forward to House File 4 being funded so that we can all be part of transformative ways that systems and people respond to and engage with our students. There are probably 100 plus initiatives out there that a school could implement, many of them canned and scripted, many that don't meet the needs of the students that are most disconnected and historically marginalized, those with disabilities, those with racial, cultural, gender, sexual identities that differ from the adults that stand in front of them. But what funding for trauma-informed and restorative schools would do is center the needs of students, center the importance of relationships and community, and provide the space needed for students to get the support they need to be engaged, to be learning, and to be successful. Educators have always known that the lived experience of students and staff are multifaceted and impact how we show up for teaching and learning. What the COVID-19 pandemic has illuminated is that schools are the hearts of our communities, and we must continue to be the hearts of communities. A space for students to show up and feel welcomed and supported and valued and seen and embraced and celebrated. Trauma-informed and restorative school communities have the ability to do all of those things. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill forward, and I look forward to the continued support.
Thank you, Ms. Wade. There is a question. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Ms. Wade. How did Roseville address the needs of those on IEPs during the different learning plans that were going on in your district? Would you address that, please?
Ms. Wade?
Thank you, Representative Erickson and Chair Dabney. I will. So my role is the compliance and monitor specialist for Roseville Area Schools in the Department of Department of Special Education. So it's what I do most of my time. What we were able to do is implement three different learning models within an IEP and think about how those services would be provided as we shift, or as we have been asked to shift between those learning models. One of the things we've done is created criteria around students that really need in-person support, and when it's been safe and we've been able to follow all of the safety protocols necessary, bring students in. So for instance, this week we have students with disabilities back in buildings. Even at the levels, at our secondary level, where our general education students are not in buildings yet. So our staff has been in. Our teachers, our special education teachers and case managers has shifted the way in which they do small groups, the way in which they join general education virtual learning sessions to provide additional support within that space. And also do one-on-one learning and sessions with their students. We have many case managers who do multiple check-ins with students, and have had some really pretty amazing success with the engagement through virtual learning, right? Which all speaks to the time and energy that our case managers and educators have put into building relationships and learning stories and narratives and what our students need to be successful as students.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Wade. That was a very important for us to hear. What percentage of the population of special needs IEPs do you think you addressed during the different learning models?
Ms. Wade?
Thank you, Representative Erickson and Chair Dabney. So while I would like to say, I mean, we addressed 100% of the needs of students, right? As we reviewed IEPs, it's one of the things that I did was review, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 IEPs to make sure that they were meeting the needs, that services were moving and shifting from either in-person to hybrid to distance or virtual learning. And so while I am quite certain there are students who are differently engaged in virtual learning than they would be if they were engaged and we were in person, I believe that we have addressed 100% of our IEPs, and educators and families and students are connecting and doing absolutely everything they can to support the learners in the best way that is work that is possible in all of these multiple different learning opportunities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Ms. Wade. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just like to note that Representative Joachim has joined the committee earlier during the hearing. Welcome. We have two more testifiers on the agenda, and then I will ask Ms. Adrians to review the fiscal note. But let's move on to Matt Shaver, Policy Director of Ed Allies. Mr. Shaver, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Dabney and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver, and I'm the Policy Director for Ed Allies, a statewide education advocacy nonprofit. We partner with educators, families, and communities to ensure that every Minnesotan has access to a rigorous and engaging education. I was honored to begin this school year as the fourth grade teacher at Hall Elementary in Minneapolis Public Schools with a class of 29 students. All kids are great, and my kids in particular proved it by showing up each day eager to connect and learn. They showed up through deaths, births, lousy Wi-Fi, family moves throughout the state, and even the country. The one constant was school. They could count on us to be there for them. And still, it wasn't enough. My kids made growth, but not enough, and the impact of distance learning on their academic and mental health was asymmetrical. And when you look at the planning, it's easier to understand that while distance learning's uneven impact wasn't intended, it also didn't happen by accident. Ed Allies analyzed 91 distance learning plans, honing in on those that serve the largest number of low-income students. The districts we looked at serve over 560,000 Minnesota students, and we found that only 40% of plans explained how they would meet the needs of students with disabilities. About 25% of plans described how they would support English learners. Only 2 mentioned diagnostic assessments to measure learning loss, and just 4 mentioned addressing learning loss. This is the COVID generation now, and we'll be remembered for what we as adults do about it. My sincere hope is that you all as decision makers meet the moment and craft equitable policy that addresses the whole child and not create false choices between just academics or just social emotional learning or prioritizing one before the other. Our kids need both at the same time right now. Our kids will not be fine with just a physical return to school. Our kids will not be fine without addressing trauma and systemic racism. Our kids will not be fine without measuring and addressing learning loss. We get our kids on the road to thriving with a recipe of data-driven, research-affirmed, targeted, and equitable decisions. It's why we support House File 4. In sum, this bill takes a balanced approach to meet the needs of the whole student with a sensible down payment in policy and investment. In particular, lines 1.19 through 1.22 that would provide funding flexibility when calculating revenue for districts and charters. Lines 4.3 through 4.31 that would allocate money for grants to provide PD for teachers on non-exclusionary discipline and trauma responsive practices. Lines 5.1 through 5.15, high dosage tutoring and reading and math, which has been proven to be an effective intervention to accelerate learning. And finally, lines 5.20 through 6.15, granting funds to support Ignite after school programming that will fund a diverse staff serving traditionally marginalized student populations to address learning loss. We at Ed Allies applaud these first steps and thank Representative Hassan for her work in ensuring that students have the resources that they need to begin the recovery process. Thank you for your time and thank you all for your public service.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Next and last testifier for the day is Mr. Uni from the Department of Education. Mr. Uni, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. You've done this before and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. First of all, thank you to Representative Hassan for carrying a bill that focuses on the immediate needs of our students, teachers, and in our schools. So the department applauds the goals of many of the provisions of this bill. And they really align well with the efforts under the governor's Due North plan, as well as the governor and lieutenant governor's budget. We really want to support working together on providing supports for districts and charter schools with their loss of pupils due to the pandemic, as well as efforts around full service community schools. The governor carries a provision funding full service community schools in his budget, as well as trauma-informed incentive grants. The department's new EDI center has a proposed grant under the governor's budget to support that as well. The focus on after-school grants, the governor, lieutenant governor also have some proposals to support before and after-school programming during the summer, as well as just the general focus on getting programming services that meet the needs of the students and communities where they are during the summer months, so that we can address the impact that has happened due to the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as some of the underlying issues that we see each and every day. So again, really want to thank the author for bringing forward a lot of these proposals and the committee for hearing it. And we really thank the author's openness to work with us to further strengthen this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rooney. Representative Joaquin, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, sorry for coming a little late. I just had a question for Ms. Wade. I know my husband actually teaches in a level 4 offsite program, and they've had some success. They've been in person since almost beginning of fall. But when they were pivoted distance learning last spring, they saw some success with some of their students in IEPs, especially around those that have a lot of anxiety and have a hard time in the school setting. Just wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Ms. Wade?
Thank you. Are you asking, I'm sorry, I want to just clarify to make sure, are you asking about the success that we have had with engaging with students and related to their social, emotional, or anxiety or stressors like that? Is that what you're asking?
Representative Joaquin?
Mr. Chair, yes, Ms. Wade, that and kind of looking at the future after COVID, and some of the ways we can reimagine delivering education for some of our students of IEP.
Ms. Wade.
Thank you, Representative Joaquin and Chair Dabney. So what I will say is that our educators, all of our educators, licensed or paraprofessionals who we would not be able to do this without, have been instrumental in connecting via virtual sessions, via phone calls, via text, via Seesaw, whatever those things might be, and really allowing time and space for students to have an opportunity to say, hey, I am really struggling with this, and this is what I need for support, right? And moving through some things like that. And so while I think no way is perfect, right? And we're probably not connecting and meeting the needs of every single student in every single way, the dedication and commitment has been huge, right? What I think this bill will do is provide the additional support that our education staff needs to really know how to engage in those conversations and stories and spaces to teach and support students in the way that they need to, right? We all have different lived experiences. And so how the pandemic is impacting me looks very different than from some of my coworkers and the students that show up every day in our spaces. We need to be able to address that, and we need to be able to allow time and space for those things to come out and be shared and nurtured and celebrated and cultivated so that learning can happen. We can't learn if we're not in a place, right? If our minds are not in the space, the place where learning happens. I can teach you all the math I know, but if your brain's not there because you're feeling some sort of way or having some anxiety or stressors around COVID and trauma, we have to address that first. And so maybe some of you have heard this, right? Maslow's before Bloom's, and that's what we need to think about. How do we make sure that those safety needs, those health needs, those food insecurity needs, those mental health needs are really all addressed before we really try to move in and expect that students are going to be engaged in learning academics at a really, really high level. We have to simultaneously do those things.
Representative Joaquin, any further questions? Thank you very much. Representative Erickson, do you have further questions?
Mr. Chair, I'll pass.
Thank you very much. Members, next we'll hear from Ms. Adrians for a brief walkthrough of the fiscal note for House File 4, and then to Representative Hassan for closing comments. Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm not sure. So we just received the fiscal note. I believe that it is attached. So if you want to follow along looking at some of the detail, you certainly can. The detail that I will be talking about, you can find on the last two pages of the fiscal note. All the numbers get broken out there. But I'll just quickly cover the cost for this bill. The agency came back with their estimation of, in the first fiscal year 2021 is where the majority of the costs would occur, and it's about $118 million. There are some costs that go into the following years, so about $16 million in fiscal year 22, and then just over $1 million in fiscal year 23. I do want to mention that the change to the general ed formula would have some changes in levy authority as well, and those would occur in fiscal year 21, but those costs, the levy authority costs, they won't be certified as adjustable until fiscal year 24. So those additional costs won't show up for a few more years. So the breakdown of I'll just cover fiscal year 21. So the costs for sections 1 and 2, this is the language that allows districts to choose a higher, to use a higher pupil count between whether fiscal year 20 or 21 was a higher pupil count. We refer to it as a hold harmless provision. And this cost is just under $39 million in fiscal year 21. The subtotal of all the different grants, so the full service community schools, Math Corps, Reading Corps, the Trauma-Informed School Incentive Grants, and then the After-School Community Learning Grants, those all add up to $18 million. And those numbers are listed in the bill, so those you can easily find. The extended time provision, this amounts to just over $12 million in fiscal year 21. And then the special ed summer program grants, this is also in Section 5 along with the extended time provisions. This would cost just under $50 million. There are some costs, some minute costs. These are the information technology costs for staff from minute in order to assist with the hold harmless provision as well as the extended time change. And this cost is just under about $31,000. And these would be one-time staffing costs for fiscal year 21 only. There would also be some costs for MDE to administer a handful of the programs, the Reading Corps, Math Corps, and to assist with the Ignite grants as well. And this cost would be about $13,000 in fiscal year 21. And so that those are the numbers that bring us to $118 million, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Adrians. Members, any questions regarding the fiscal note? Seeing none, Representative Hassan, it looks like it's back to you for any closing comments you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. And I want to thank all the testifiers, especially the young people that share their wisdom with us. It's always refreshing to hear from young people because they're the ones that are impacted by this the most. I just want to say that I hope that everyone can support this bill. As we know, COVID has taken a toll on our education system. It has worsened our opportunity gap and has also left our most vulnerable students struggling like never before. This bill, as you know, provides, wraparound services for students, strong investment to address the ongoing learning loss increase and increase in opportunity gaps and funding stabilization to compensate for the temporary decrease in student enrollment. I know you will stand up for students because I believe that everyone in this committee cares about education. So I hope you can continue supporting this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Members, remind you that was an informational hearing. As the session continues, we'll look to bring this bill forward for full consideration at that time. Next week, I anticipate that we will be continuing same conversations that we had started this week. I anticipate that we will be meeting all 3 days next week. Representative Thompson, you have a question.
Thank you, Chair. I just had a quick comment. There was a kid that spoke, and I didn't catch their name.
Little Daniel, the fifth grader, or Ms. Sims, the 11th grader?
The 11th grader.
Kayla Sims.
Kayla Sims.
And when from Edison High School.
When she spoke, I said, oh, my God, that's my daughter talking to me. And so I just wanted to, like, highlight that, like, these are our babies testifying here today. And that's how I felt, like my baby was testifying to this body. And I know when the kids talk, a lot of times we don't listen. But I heard everything she said because I'm going through the exact same thing here in my home with my daughter, who was also on the honor roll for the past 4 years, and she's struggling. I do know that my daughter just wants to get outside and be with her friends. She wants to be in a space where she can learn with people. And I can't help, and I hate to be the dad that can't provide stuff for my kid. I can't, like, lose my kid to COVID either. But I heard the kid when she was talking, and I heard the 11-year-old kid when they were talking. And these are our babies speaking to us. I also heard Representative Hassan speak about investments. These kids are our investment. We better invest wisely now. We want a greater payoff later. Because these kids are going to have to take care of us later on in life. And we better get doggone right down to business when it comes to investing in our kids, fully investing in our kids. And I just wanted to share that with you. Like, our babies were just speaking to us. And it touched me. And I just had to say that, Chair. So I thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Members, we'll see you all 3 days next week. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.